Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking this hour about online offerings from the South Dakota Humanities Council. Speakers Bureau gatherings are currently being offered online only. Patrick Hicks is a humanities scholar, and his programs offer everything from lessons on the history of Auschwitz to writing poetry. You probably know him as the host of Poetry from Studio 47, which airs every Friday here on SDPB, and also for his many books, poetry books and fiction books as well. And he's joining us now for a look at virtual gatherings for challenging topics of our time. Patrick Hicks, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Good talking with you.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about we were talking with Ann Vollen a minute ago, and just how important these Speakers Bureau conversations can be right now in 2020, because they get beyond, you know, the social media post or the quick news article, and they're more in-depth, and they have these scholars who have done this research. And tell us a little bit why you think it's been important for the Humanities Council to keep the Speakers Bureau program going in spite of the challenges, and then we'll talk a little bit about how those challenges can also be opportunities. But first, why do these things matter now more than ever?
It's a wonderful question. And, I'm struck by the fact that during this pandemic and during these uncertain times, people have turned to the humanities in general for stories, for intellectual nourishment, for a greater sort of maybe understanding of our current time and how it's placed in the larger sort of frame of time of our country. So that's one reason why I think that the humanities are just so necessary. People are turned to them in times of need to just try to figure out who we are. And here we have this large sort of catalog of humanities scholars that can speak to a very specific type of topic and contextualize it in ways that maybe people will find interesting and useful. And, you know, one of the great things about it moving virtually, and I'm one person that I love being with people in a room, but of course that's very challenging at this point in time. One of the things that I find really interesting about this is that I'm able to connect with people on the other side of the state, and I'm able to meet with people and to share with people that maybe I wouldn't otherwise meet. And I find that really exciting and novel.
Yeah. As you have looked at, and, you know, you're a college professor at Augustana, you're the writer in residence there, you know, you've taught at Ollie, you have students, you have your own work and novels and poetry and short stories. When you look at Speakers Bureau gatherings and you kind of take the offerings that you already have and think about what they mean for the time that we're living in today, what has some of that insight led you to sort of change and add to some of the conversations that you're having?
That's a wonderful question. I find that I tend to talk and to guide discussion in ways that I usually do. That particular part hasn't changed an awful lot, especially since, you know, I might be lecturing on the rise of the Third Reich or the history of the Holocaust or how to write fiction, how to write poetry. Those particular things haven't changed very much in how I've done it in the last, you know, several years, 10 years even. But what is different are the questions that I'm getting, because everyone is looking and asking questions through a different prism now than they were 12 months ago. And I find that really, really fun and interesting, because when it comes to the question and answer portion of my particular, you know, presentation, that's when I really find that fun, quite frankly, because we're having this dialogue about the concepts I'm very familiar with and, you know, I specialize in, but they're sort of seen differently from a particular slant, which is new, because this particular point in time in American history is new for all of us.
Yeah, I have examples popping in my head left and right, but maybe I'll let you lead the way. And one of the things I'm thinking of is in a time of civil unrest and racial conversations, you know, how often we see the work of James Baldwin being brought forward, for example, or Langston Hughes. Are there poets that you go back to time and time again when life sort of changes? I mean, you've adapted poetry from Studio 47 to sort of look at the world that we live in. What do the poets have to teach us, and how can we kind of incorporate that into our own poetry writing, as you also teach writing as well, to reflect on a time in history as we live it?
Mm, yeah. With fiction, you're creating a world which wasn't there. And fiction is usually told in the past tense. So when you read a novel, you know that it's sort of taken place in a different time or a different sort of place and space or a different, you know, maybe realm of fantasy or something like that. But poetry, again, this is not an ironclad rule, but poetry is usually more immediate and it's usually closer to the present tense. So it's funny you should mention this because I just happened to turn to a poet who I have deep respect for, and that's Seamus Heaney. And I was looking at some of his poems that deal with the troubles in Northern Ireland in the 1970s, and I couldn't help be struck by the civil unrest which was happening in Northern Ireland with the car bombs going off and the protests that he was writing about in the immediate sense that it's happening around him. But he's finding out how to transmute that into art. And you know, that's one of the great things about the humanities, because we are going through this great turmoil with questions of race and social justice. And by the way, we have a pandemic that's happening at the same time. And all of this is going to coalesce. And it's going to be very interesting for me personally as an artist to see what my fellow artists are creating from what is swirling around all of us right now. I think 2020, living through it, is perhaps... it's unnerving and it might not be an awful lot of fun, but I suspect that when we look back at the art that will be generated from this, I think it's going to be necessarily very powerful.
Yeah. I mean, it's all of a sudden people are interested in the Decameron again. So it's just been interesting to look at some of the things that people, you know, are exploring in new ways and are legitimately excited about from a literary standpoint.
Oh, yeah. And I'll just jump in. Yeah. One of my colleagues here in the English department, Dr. Sarah Rood, she's actually teaching a course this coming semester on the literature of pandemics. Yeah. I'm pretty sure she wouldn't have done this a few years ago, but I think her students are really yearning for, well, how did other people write and survive a pandemics of the, you know, several hundred years ago. So I think that's going to be a really interesting course.
Yeah, I want to take that. Sign me up.
Yeah, me too.
Before I let you go, something else that I want to read is a new book that you have coming out. Will you tease us a little bit about what you're working on and what we might anticipate reading from you in the future? And of course, we'll have you back on the program for a longer conversation once the book is released.
Oh, I would love that. I have a new novel coming out in September called In the Shadow of Dora, and it's about the real-life intersections between the Holocaust and the Apollo program. I've been working on it for several years, and I just cannot wait to get this into the hands of readers. I've done an awful lot of on-ground research in Germany and at the Kennedy Space Center and at Mission Control in Houston, and it's a story that I don't think an awful lot of people know, and I'm just really excited to do readings, be that virtually or face-to-face.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll make time for In the Moment in South Dakota Public Broadcasting for an in-depth conversation when that book is released. Patrick Hicks, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Talk to you later, Lori.
Now, Lawrence Diggs is one of the South Dakota Humanities Council Speaker Bureau presenters as well, who has embraced virtual gatherings during the pandemic. He offers programs on everything from prison recidivism to representative democracy, and he joins us on the phone. Lawrence, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you have also been part of an enthusiastic response to moving these speakers' programs to a virtual platform and helping others come along and figure out how to do that. Why does it matter that these programs right now keep going, now more than ever?
Well, because humans need connections, and if we don't have that, then a lot of our humanity is lost. And we can't as easily be with each other, at least not without putting each other at risk right now. So we have to do what we can. So we use the technology that we have at the moment, which people in past pandemics have not had. We can use that to at least keep in touch. We can telephone, we can write, we can even send postcards. But when we need to get together as a group, then it's sometimes it's not only good to hear all the group voices, but also to see faces. And humans have this thing that's kind of it comes with part of our baby package, that we get a lot from facial recognition, so to speak. We read faces real well, even see well, we can start to read things in people's faces. If you watch a baby, how intensely it looks at its parents' faces. So I think that these kind of opportunities, while they certainly don't replace human-to-human contact by any means, they're the best we can do at the moment.
Yeah. Patrick Hicks was just telling us how some people have really changed their questions during the interactive part of any speaker's program, and the questions they're asking about any of his programs are very relevant to the time that we're living in. And I'm wondering if you've had the same experience where people, when you get to the, you know, interactive part, or they're asking your questions, if it's a question that's of the time, of this moment.
Yes, even when you try to, you have another, let's say, agenda or subject that you want to talk about, it tends to morph back into whatever is top of mind for people. And I kind of go with that, because if that's what's on their mind, that's just what's on their mind. And we can, you know, let people try to work it out. And I find that this idea or this opportunity we have to come together allows us to crowdsource solutions, because I've found that none of us have all the solutions, but all of us have part of the solutions. And when we put those together, we tend to end up with better solutions than if we that if even one expert, in air quotes, tries to work it out. So I kind of go with that flow.
Yeah. What's on people's minds right now? Are they thinking about the pandemic? Are they thinking about connection and disconnection? Are they thinking about race, history? What are some of the things that you see arising again and again that's really top of mind for South Dakotans in these programs?
I think all of the things that you mentioned, they certainly are top of mind, because whatever is tends to, you know, grab headlines, it tends to direct people's attention. And when there are things that are gut-wrenching, or certainly things that demand people's attention as a life or death thing, like the pandemic, we can sort of, people can joke around with it, but they tend to stop doing that when someone they know personally dies from the thing. They tend to change their attitude and become not only converted but evangelists for doing like things like distancing and masking and things like that. But I think people are going also they're going through a period of like, who am I? What am I doing? You know, am I doing enough? What do I represent? You know, who do I want to be? And I think that that is a good place to be, but it's also a troubling place for people, because to reevaluate the fundamentals of what your core is, that's really hard work. And I don't know how much we can do, you know, online, because it is hard work. But I think being online with each other and talking it out, I think it plays a part. I think when people can see that other people are struggling with this too, even if they don't have solutions, they don't feel so alone in that struggle. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah. I don't know if you have noticed this, but just what you said, it seems to me to be really central to this idea of people tearing down statues of, you know, of Robert E. Lee, or even of Thomas Jefferson, where they're really, and how much of an affront that can be to other people who have different opinions about those statues or sculptures or, you know, public art. And there's a great discomfort over this conversation. And I wonder if it doesn't have to do with what you just said there, that it's incredibly hard work to sort of reevaluate something about, you know, what exactly does this represent? What exactly does this say about our community or our country or ourselves? Are you seeing that when you look around at that particular topic, that it's such a messy conversation because it gets to the core of who we think that we are?
Exactly. And I think that it's useful for all of us to be aware of how tender that spot is, because, you know, when we go through a quote dark night of the soul, meaning that everything is stripped away, that what you thought you were and what you are is challenged. Even if it's not stripped away, it's fundamentally challenged. It's like the army's at the gate, they're across the moat already. That kind of feeling, like it's imminent, it could be imminent doom, because who are you if not those sort of infrastructures that you've built for yourself in terms of what you believe? So if this person grew up believing, you know, George Washington never told a lie and he chopped down the cherry tree and told his mother the truth, and, you know, but you don't know that other side because that wasn't in the fairy tale that you got in the first grade about the founding fathers. Well, you have a completely different idea. So when some, and you've built your sense of who you are around that concept of this is virtuous, this person is virtuous, let me be like them. Then you find out, well, there was some virtuous things, but there was this other part. We don't normally think about our, quote, heroes in terms of, like, they're still humans, and what we admire about them is often at the exclusion of all their foibles. So when we introduce that, then it becomes a lot more complicated. It's like, do I really like this guy or not? You know, this is something, and when you do it all at once with people, that is a prescription for potential for meltdown. And so that's why I think it's really important to engage with people in the struggle and give them information and give them another feeling that, hey, like, look, I used to like George Washington too. I used to be an admirer of Abraham Lincoln, too, until I found out that Abraham Lincoln was responsible for, you know, a mass hanging of innocent Native people. You know, and you say, well, you know, okay, this guy had this part, but they didn't get this part right, you know.
Yeah.
So,
I like what you said there about
grow up having an. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. We have to wrap up here, so I just, I'll let you.
I was just going to say, I grew up having an admiration for the Buffalo Soldiers, but then you find out that they were key in massacring the Native people, you know? Okay. So it's like, okay, well, that's a mixed up feeling. So I know we're going through that, and I want to be a part of helping people work that through.
Yeah, and be aware of how tender that spot is, and that sounds like a perfect humanities conversation. You can find more about the scholars who are available and how to bring them into your group digitally at the Humanities Council website. Lawrence Digg, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.